man with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Gaming Steve.
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What's to see?
What's to me?
What's to me?
Gaming Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who eats sushi with Solid Snake, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker, and in this week's show, I go through the latest gaming news. I have an interview with Nobu Taguchi, the localization producer for Coldcept Saga, the upcoming strategy board game, collectible card game, Monopoly game, etc. for the Xbox 360. I then have a contest where I'm going to be giving away 4 copies of Coldcept Saga to some lucky listeners. I then have show mail and then final thoughts. So before we get into the news, a little bit of tidbit and notes on the show. So it's been a little while since I had a last show. After the holiday, I took a little bit of time off. And then if you noticed, I added a whole bunch of new writers. I think we have 6 new contributors to the site. So that's actually been taking up a lot, if not all, of my time. So I just haven't had time to do the show recently. I also moved over the entire site to a new server. And those people who are on the forums know that that did not go smoothly at all. The server and the forums are monstrous, to say the least. So it took quite a bit of elbow grease to finally get it onto a brand new sparkling server. But the new server is about 2,000% faster than the old server. It's actually lightning fast. So it is well worth the time and effort. So that's finally done. And we seem to be getting into a pretty good routine with the new editors on the site. So I finally have a little bit of time to do the show. So, but as I said also previously, that being able to do the show on a weekly basis is a little tough for me. So we'll probably be doing it a little bit more like a bi-weekly basis or so. But also, it's also going to revolve around how many interviews I have, because I really like to always try to have an interview just about every show, if possible. The good news is I have a whole bunch lined up for upcoming shows, and later I even have one lined up with Richard Garrett. And that one's going to be very cool, because not only are we going to talk about his workings at NCSoft and Tabula Rasa, but I'm actually going to talk to him after he comes back from training in Russia to go up in space. So that should be a fantastic interview. I'm looking forward to that. That's not for another couple of months from now. And plus, of all the people in the industry, he's probably responsible for me getting into the video game industry probably more than anyone else, since the Ultimate series was one of the very first video games that really sucked me in back in, I can almost say the 80s, but it's probably 19 AD. That's how long ago that is, and that's how old I am, which is pretty sad. Anyhow, let's get into this week's show.
Gaming news! Gaming news!
So first up in the news is a rumor, believe it or not, that BioShock is going to have a prequel coming out, a prequel sequel, so to speak, in 2009, and the prequel will actually deal with the City of Rapture itself and sort of show what the city was like before it all went to hell in the actual BioShock. Why am I reporting this as news is because I actually think this is true, and I'll tell you why. If you pick up the latest PC Gamer magazine and skip to page 96, there's a fantastic article by Ken Levine, and he goes on to explain about game stories and characters in gaming and compares it to movies and regular mediums, TV and such. And he goes on to explain how the main character in BioShock was not like Big Daddy's or Little Sisters or even you. The main character was Rapture, the city itself. And, you know, after reading this from the horse's mouth, the guy who created BioShock, I have to think that, yes, they're definitely going to make sure that they have the City of Rapture as a big feature. You know, sure enough, with BioShock, they could have done anything. They could have brought it somewhere new or do something new with it, but there's no way they're going to do that. And he even explains in World of Warcraft, you know, the main character in World of Warcraft is the world itself, hence World of Warcraft. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, you might have to kill things, and yeah, you want to level your character up, but the reason you're going to do it is not because of the amazing story or the quest, but you just want to keep going from area to area to see what cool new area is next, to see what cool new monsters you're going to be fighting. And it's funny, he got his character up to level 58, and that's kind of like the part without buying the expansion that you kind of have, quote, seen everything. And I myself did the exact same thing. It's like I got my character up to level 58 and then kind of stopped because I was like, okay, I'm kind of done. You know, eventually I brought it all the way up to 60 plus, but, you know, I find it funny that he just did the exact same thing I did. And sure enough, I agree. I agree 1,000% with this. You know, a lot of video games, you know, because you're in the world for so long, look at Grand Theft Auto, or really any game by Rockstar, you know, the Warriors or the Excellent Bully, the characters themselves, you know, after you see them for a couple of hours, you kind of learn the routines. You know, same thing with monsters, too. It's like, and that's why level design is so important. It's like, you know, you'll learn the routines, you'll learn how they attack, you'll learn, you know, what they're doing and what their whole thing is. And if you're playing a game for 40, 50 hours, that will become pretty boring after a while. You know, even if you fight, a Big Daddy for the 10th time, you know, or 20th time, it's gonna become a little stale. But if there's always one more thing to do, and there's always one more area to see, and there's a little bit more to uncover, and you could do it at your own pace, that's a really, you know, fun, innovative way to keep you involved in the game. You know, Grand Theft Auto is probably the best example, because in those worlds, you can spend hours on just a few city blocks learning every in and out of, you know, oh, wait, you find a quicker way. You know, it's like real life. You know, you live in a neighborhood. I just moved 7 months ago, and it's funny. I think about this, talk about it with my wife. Now I'm learning all the quick little shortcuts of how to get places and how to go, you know, faster from one place to another, how to avoid lights, and, you know, same thing. It's like you will learn all the little tricks in Grand Theft Auto, how to get around this area, how to do this, how to do that. Same thing in, you know, BioShock very quickly, especially like Fort Frolic. You'll learn, that's a, you know, a little confusing level. It's also probably the best level in the game, and you'll very quickly learn your way around that level so you can get from point A to point B very, very fast. So yeah, I'm very curious to see how they handle the sequel, especially because BioShock really did come out of nowhere. A lot of people are now going to expect a lot from the next game, and how are they going to show Rapture with people in it? Because, you know, first-person shooters don't work well when you have a lot of people in it, unless they somehow change it to a sort of adventure-type game, more of a Grand Theft Auto-type game. I imagine that they're going to have to come up with some disaster of some sort that evacuates Rapture so that you're only there with the baddies and that's it. So next up, I have Soul Calibur 4, and it turns out Star Wars characters are going to be in Soul Calibur 4. Darth Vader and Yoda are going to be in Soul Calibur 4. Okay, what? So this is sort of... I'm not sure what to think of this. Soul Calibur is one of my favorite games of all time. Back in the Supernova, my old company, we used to have Soul Calibur tournaments every single day. We used to have a tournament after work or during work or, well, all day at work. But we would randomly select... eight characters. You just have the computer randomly select eight characters for you and randomly select the battle environments, and we just have round robin tournaments. So you'd have to master every single character in the game. So it was one of the few games I had that question this week of what games you felt like you completely obliterated and mastered in every way, shape, and form. Soul Calibur is mine, is that I feel that I have totally mastered at least the first one, the second and third one not so much. So mastered that game to the point that I used to play it and it felt like it was in slow motion. Ever had that happen? Is that I actually used to sit there and think, wow, the game is just not going fast enough. 60 times a second of input, not fast enough. The controller needs to go faster. And it's one of the only times that's ever happened to me. Anyhow, back to this. It's like Darth Vader and Yoda, they just don't fit in. I mean, first of all, there's Star Wars in like a medieval universe. They're using lightsabers, and don't those things like cut off your arms and legs? I never understood how they can somehow get those things in there without totally destroying their credibility. And yeah, it's fun, and I guess, you know, it's gonna anything to make sure that the game sells a little bit more, because yes, in Soul Calibur 3, you know, they did that with Soul Calibur 3 or 2, I forget, where, you know, they brought in a, you know, neat character in each game. They had Link, and they had, you know, in the Wii, in the GameCube version. I forgot who they had for the other two versions, the Xbox version and the PlayStation version. They had special characters for each one of them. Like Spawn was one of them or something. And that was a huge hit. And I guess that was kind of cool, but this is just weird, man. I don't know. It's like Star Wars. And in fact, a lot of people thought this thing was fake. And even I was kind of like, what? So I actually went onto the Namco Bandai website, into their press area, looked in their folder where you get the FTP assets. And sure enough, in there was something called like Special Guests, I think it's called. And there was like, okay, let me look. And there was Darth Vader and Yoda in clear as day. So I was like, okay, there you go. I guess it's real. Whatever, to sell more games. So there you go. Next up, Wii Fit has sold over 1 million copies in Japan. So this is pretty big news. You know, first of all, a lot of people have been asking me about this game, both professionally and I guess not professionally. You know, friends of mine, things like that. And I even answered this question on the show a few weeks ago. It was like, do I think Wii Fit's going to be a big hit? And yeah, I do. There's a lot of reasons for it. But the first one is that, you know, it's, you know, you actually want this. Let's just go back for a second. You know, a lot of people really, I still get it. A lot of people are just angry at Nintendo. They're just pissed. They're just upset that the Wii has somehow taken out the hardcore edge that video games should, or like did and should have. That it should only be for, you know, for fanboys. It should only be for people who truly love video games. It should only be for people who truly, you know, want to play these and know every single aspect and can tell you the whole family tree for Master Chief, you know. But that's just not the way it is. And, you know, for better or for worse, video games are becoming more and more prevalent. They're becoming more widely used. And something like this is good because it will show the softer side to video games. For every story you have of, I don't know, some conservative blogger going on and on about that Mass Effect is nothing more than like a virtual orgy, then you have a Wii Fit that shows that, look, video games are not only fun, but they're helpful. They can make you lose weight. You know, they can help you get loose. They can be used as exercise. You know, sure, you have Dance Dance Revolution, but Dance Dance Revolution is still too gamey. I'll be honest. Like, you know, sure, it was in Malcolm in the Middle, and it's kind of been used in a couple TV shows, so it's kind of breaking the culture barrier, but not really. It's a game. You know, it's a cool game, but it's a game. Wii Fit will do it. Wii Fit is the one that will show you, look, it is, you know, just the name itself. It's nothing, it doesn't try to be a game. It tries to be exactly what it is. And that could be, again, why the gamers hate it, is that, oh, what is going on? Why are they coming out with these, quote, you know, educational or fun or, heaven forbid, you know, exercise videos for gaming? I actually remember about a year ago or so, there was this, you know, game that came out for the Xbox, and it was a game that helped you exercise. And it very quietly did pretty well. And when I saw that, I was thinking, you know, it's probably getting to the point where you can start coming out with more serious, especially with Brain Age, that you can start coming out with more serious, quote, games, and they will start selling because there's a lot of people out there who are interested in this. I'll be honest, I can't wait. I cannot wait for Wii Fit. I mean, I exercise a lot. You know, right now I use the treadmill or I use a stationary bike a lot, and I'll just sit there watching TV. I guess I could play a video game. I never thought of that before. Well, anyhow, you know, I'd rather play a game, and like Wii Fit will fit the bill. So who wouldn't want to play a game while they exercise? It's just a no-brainer. And on top of that, you know, they're going to get more sales. Not just myself, but places like nursing homes. And don't think, you know, oh, you know, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, they would kill to get that extra 10, 20,000 people. And not only that, if they hear, oh, you know, Grandma is playing with Wii Fit. Oh, really? What's Grandma doing? Oh, that's pretty cool. Maybe I'll buy that for myself. You know, it adds up. You know, every little piece adds up. Don't think Nintendo DS was an accident. Casual gaming and, you know, not kidding the non-hardcore gamer is really going to be the next big thing. And I can't wait. Well, I can wait. But I'm very, very curious to see what the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox 720, whatever they're going to call it, is going to be like. Because I am willing to bet just about anything that they are going to go hardcore casual, if that makes sense. They're going to make sure that they hit the casual market. And they, I mean, with the absolute monster success of the Wii, they're going to make sure that they hit that and they get every single piece of that Wii pie that they can get. Next up, Xbox Live Arcade and GoldenEye. So this is a story that went from fascinating to very silly very quickly. So it turns out that Rare and Nintendo and Microsoft were getting together and they were making GoldenEye 007 for the Xbox Live Arcade, and they were going to, you know, they were taking the same game, they were putting in some live capabilities so you could play multiplayer, all that stuff, but it was going to be the same game with the same graphics, and they were going to release it on Xbox Live. Well, after the game was pretty much done and finished, Nintendo and Microsoft couldn't agree on a number. You know, Microsoft wanted to probably pay nothing, and you know, and Nintendo wanted to get paid quite a bit of money, from what I hear, to have this game released on their system. And they couldn't agree, so the game's not being released. So that's the serious part of the story. The silly part of the story is now I'm seeing all these people petitioning, saying, oh, come on, release it, we want to see it, we want to see it, we want to play it. Well, once again, and I look at the very first thing I do, and I tell everyone to do this, let's look at the business aspect, okay? Let's forget about the fanboy aspect of, oh, that'd be cool to play GoldenEye on my Xbox Live. Wouldn't that be fun? Let's look at the business aspect, okay? What is in it for everyone? That's the, you always got to look at that. So let's look at Microsoft first. Microsoft, what do they get out of it? Well, they get a prestigious game, one of the all-time classics. You know, say what you want about GoldenEye, but it was a monster hit. Okay, it put Nintendo on the map. It was one of the greatest games of all time. It's still talked about to this day. You can see how much, you know, fervor this article is getting on Dig and all these other sites. You know, and this is getting a lot of traffic. Sure enough, this game still holds credence. It is a very important game in the industry. So Microsoft's going to go crazy. They're going to go, even if no one even buys the game, they're going to be able to say, look, we have an iconic game on Xbox Live. You can buy it. You can play it. And on top of that, it's a Nintendo game, no less. That's right. We got a Nintendo game on Xbox Live. Just shows you how cool we are. So that's Microsoft. Now you have Nintendo. What does Nintendo get out of this? Well, let's see. They get some money, of course. But to be honest, Xbox Live, you know, some of the top games like Uno have sold a couple million copies. It's not done like ridiculously well. That sounds like a lot, but you know, when the games are $5-$10, they're not exactly raking in the dough there. So yeah, Nintendo, they're not hurting for cash, okay? That's one thing you don't have to worry about Nintendo. Their stock has gone up about 500% in the last 4 years. They're like, what, I think, ranked number 2 on the Nikkei. So they're a pretty big company. I wouldn't worry too much about them with making money. That's not really on the top of their mind. Sure, a little bit more here and there. But for the price they'll have to pay, which is taking an iconic game and putting on Xbox and giving all that prestige to Microsoft, why would they do that, okay? What is the point of that? They could take the game and put it on the Wii. Why can't they just put it on their virtual console system? They can. I'm sure they can very easily do that. And I'm kind of sure they probably will do it at some point. I kind of assume they would. So what is the only, what would they get out of this? What would they get? The only thing they would get is money. So maybe they'll go to Microsoft and say, okay, we'll let you do this. We want $50 million and we want 100% of the revenue. So you get the actual, you get to tell people that you are using this game, and that's that, and we get all the money. And Microsoft probably said, no way. And let me tell you, this just triggered something in my mind. This is 100% true story. This is 100% true. I was first working, one of my first jobs way out of college, I was actually working Bankers Trust, and we were setting up, they were setting up their mortgage retirement funds with Microsoft. It's a long story short, but they bought, Bankers Trust bought a firm to actually do retirement accounts, and then they were going to take, this was like a big deal, they were going to get all of Microsoft's retirement accounts, and they were going to manage them for them. Now, in theory, this is a deal that's worth just millions and millions and millions of dollars, and I actually remember working on this because I was doing the website at the time. That they were, you know, they were having a really tough negotiation. Microsoft had something in their in their contract saying that they could fire anyone at any time for any reason, which went all the way up to the president. They had all these crazy, crazy stipulations in there. And this is back in the early. This isn't even in the 90s. This is like 93, 94. So this is right when the websites went. Netscape just came out. You know, it was like Microsoft didn't even really have a browser. So this is, we're talking really early days. And I'll never forget this. At the end of negotiation, at the very end, Microsoft actually changed the contract and said in the contract the fee that Bankers Trust was going to get for this was nothing. They changed it to zero. And they're like, what? And this is after months of negotiation. They're saying, what are you talking about? They said, well, the actual, we are not going to pay you for this because the prestige that you are going to get by having Microsoft as one of your premier clients will get you so much business that is payment enough. And now they said this. I was in the room. They said this to one of the top people of Bankers Trust. And I'll never forget that. And they were just flabbergasted. You know, they were like, you're kidding, right? So we're going to do all this. We're going to spend millions of dollars to, in theory, have your name and use that as leverage to get more accounts. And Microsoft was going to do it. And I don't know exactly what happened. I think they walked away because my project ended before that. But I think about that, and I think about this now. It's the same thing. It's that Nintendo it probably went to Microsoft and did the same thing. They said, you know what? You're going to get so much prestige that you're just going to get so much people to like join Microsoft and join the Xbox and Live Arcade. That's payment enough. We want money, and we want everything, and you get to use our name. And Microsoft probably said, no way. So trust me, I saw it firsthand. It is, I still think it's a crazy story, and I'll never forget that. It was nuts. It was actually, they must have spent millions. They actually bought, Bankers Trust bought this firm specifically to do retirement accounts, and that actually was to get Microsoft's account. And then at the end, they pulled these shenanigans. It was insane. And if I didn't see it myself, I wouldn't believe it. So yeah, don't think that these things don't happen. This is common. I see crazy stuff like this all the freaking time, every single day. So, again, don't hold your breath. I don't expect to see this thing coming out anytime soon. Next up, Assassin's Creed DS prequel is confirmed. So, you know, last July, there was this, like, you know, there was like rumor speculation that supposedly that the Assassin's Creed was supposed to be coming out for the DS. It was listed, but no one knew anything about this game. There was no information. And to be honest, no one even knew if it was still coming out. It was supposedly coming out next month. No one knows anything about it. There was no screenshots. There was no press releases. There was no box art. Nothing. This thing was just like, it was like the best kept secret. And Go Nintendo managed to find or somehow get, I'm sure someone at the plant was printing up the boxes and leaked it. This happens all the time. And someone leaked the actual box itself, which has a little bit of the gameplay on it and has some pictures. And everyone used that box like you wouldn't believe. And sure enough, I used it too. And boy, that got a lot of traffic. I just can't believe that here is a game that no one has no information about, no one knows anything about it, it is super top secret. Nintendo has done this for years successfully, and now it looks like Ubisoft's getting on this train, and unfortunately it looks like everyone's going to start doing this. It's like, okay, we're going to tell you nothing about this game. We're going to keep it totally top secret. We're going to make this thing so exclusive is that when you find out a single tiny piece, you're going to go nuts, and you can't wait to buy it. You know, this is like the Clover Field effect, I would say, or like, oh, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like, you know, the Blair Witch Project or something. It's like, we tell you nothing, or even the iPhone, they tell you nothing about it. We're just going to show you a tiny little piece, and that'll be enough to make you go totally insane and crazy and get the game. And it worked. It absolutely is working. I mean, I couldn't believe the traffic. It's been all over the place. People are going nuts. Are people going to go out and buy the game no matter what the reviews are, like the first Assassin's Creed? I don't know. Who knows? But man, it's crazy. I cannot believe the insanity that this game has generated. I don't think it's good for the industry. I really don't. I don't think that the act of being secretive and giving out as little information as possible is good for anyone, especially the consumers. And speaking of this, just on an aside, Kane and Lynch, if you remember that game, of course, once again, there's no such thing as bad publicity. It sold over 1 million copies, so there you have it. Everyone was like, oh, you know, boycott GameSpot, GameStop, everyone, just boycott them. Oh, yeah, the game stinks, blah, blah, blah. It's a terrible game, on and on and on and on. It sold 1 million copies. It made a ton of money. They're going to do a sequel and probably movies coming out on it. So, yeah. Just goes to show you. And not only that, if you look at GameSpot's numbers, take a look. Go like to any ranking website like, you know, Complete or Alexa, and their numbers haven't moved an inch. So everyone can talk about boycotting them, but nothing's actually happening. At least I don't see a single change in their traffic. So people say big game, but when it comes down to it, they just go back to their habits. Actually, I myself have not been going to. That's actually one of my favorite sites, and I haven't been to it in almost a month. And that's only because I've been changing. I read everything on XML now, so I kind of I don't really have XML feeds, so I'm never on the site. Plus, no games have been coming out, so imagine once the games start coming out, I'll start reading the reviews. Next up is the Xbox Live lawsuit is muzzling Microsoft. So we wrote about this on the site that three disgruntled subscribers in Texas sued Xbox Live and Microsoft for $10 million because of, you know, some service interruptions. Well, what that did is now they're being sued. Now they can't say anything about the status of Xbox Live because that can be used against them in court. And, you know, if they say anything even remotely negative, that can be used. So thank you very much, three people who are trying to milk Microsoft for as much money as possible. I can't believe. I mean, first of all, there's an agreement. The EULA or whatever you call it, the End User License Agreement, the EULA, which says clearly it states right in there that you agree that this thing is not going to be up 24/7. That if there's service interruptions, they will try to make it up to you. And here's again. I talk to my lawyer. Let's go look at this from a business point of view. I talk to my lawyer almost every day, okay? I've been in a lot of lawsuits. I know what this entails, okay? It's very simple. The first thing you look at is, what are your damages? What did it cause me? Like, what did I lose? So these people who are paying, I don't even know what gold is. Like, gold's like $50 a year or something like that. So if gold is costing them $50 a year and it's down for a day or two, and we did the math, you know, it's a couple pennies. You know, for, let's say it's you know, a couple dollars they lost out. So that's what their losses are. And not only that, Xbox was very smart. You know, Microsoft is smart. They right away, they're giving away a free game. You know, they could also very easily credit everyone's account. Maybe everyone give everyone a free month. The courts will look at that and say, you know what? You're getting compensation. And it's, you know, it is a one-to-one compensation. You know, you have to show that this service going down for a few days is worth millions of dollars in compensation. Like, what did this do? What suffering did this cause you to give you that? And if they can't, there's probably little to no chance that these people will get any money whatsoever. So what is this? It's a money grab. I mean, it's simple as that. It's the, you know, what they're hoping is, you know, these lawyers, they'll sue, they get something like, they get usually a third to half of whatever they get back. So these three people will get what's ever left over of that. So, you know, if they get, $100,000 in settlement and the lawyers keep $50,000 and then these three guys split the remaining $50,000, you know, it's pretty good for doing pretty much nothing. And that's what they're really hoping. It's like, you know, they find something, oh, it's popular, let's get a together class action lawsuit, the lawyers will do it, the people don't have to do anything. You know, they're hoping this thing never goes to court, that Microsoft will settle. Because, but, you know, with a company like Microsoft, they have lawyers there full time. They have a whole army of lawyers. You know, they're hoping, well, this is worth, you know, it's not worth the bad press. That's what they're really hoping, is that Microsoft will settle this, put this out of the public's eye, you know, because this is costing them probably, you know, people from buying the game service and buying Xboxes and stuff like that. So they're just trying to make this a nuisance. And You can sue anyone for anything. So I guess this is, this is just the world we live in. But I don't know. I hope these guys get absolutely nothing. And then even worse is I read an article about the lawyers who came out and they said that this was not about the money at all. That this was just to prove a point, to show that Microsoft that you can't just do this to people. Yeah, okay, whatever. I believe you. Next up, Smash Brothers Brawl is delayed to March 9th. So once again, Smash Brothers has been pushed back. It was supposed to come out in 2007. It got pushed back. It got pushed back some more. Now it's been pushed back to March 9th. A lot of people have been pretty upset about this. And you know what? I can see why. But Microsoft, again, they're milking this. They're doing a pretty damn good job, you know. They're keeping it in the public eye. You know, for every day they push this thing back a little bit more, they do a very, very good job with Brawl. You know, they release a new character, like, every few weeks. They release a little bit more information, a few more photos. So they keep this thing in the public's eye forever. And then they delay it continuously, so it's in the public's eye for even longer. So it's like, oh, we're almost there, we're almost there. Oh, we're not there, we got to push it back. Okay, we're almost there. Oh, we got to push it back. This is great. This is brilliant PR and marketing, I have to say. These guys are getting their money's worth because this thing is everywhere. And I'm actually not a big Brawl fan. A little too much craziness. I know for little kids, they love this thing, but it's just not for me. I really don't really care. I do think it's a pretty cool game, but personally, it's not exactly my cup of tea. Maybe I'll be playing with my kids. Maybe it'll change my opinion of the game. But I have to, from a gaming point of view, I really don't care too much. But from a PR marketing point of view, brilliant, brilliant, very, very good call, Nintendo. Next up, Spore and Call of Duty 4 are confirmed for the Macintosh. So at Macworld, there was actually a Mac running Spore and Call of Duty 4 as well. So I guess it's a pretty big deal. It was very secretly being done, and it got a lot of press. And you know, anything Spore related, of course, I'm going to report. But you know, with the newest Macs, you can just run PC games on them. So why don't they just do that? I guess, you know, having a native. But you know, again, it doesn't really surprise me. You know, any of these AAA titles, if they can come out on as many platforms as possible, it's worth for them to go through the effort to port it over. Look at Blizzard. You know, it's, you know, a lot of people forget this, but every single game that Blizzard comes out with is always cross-compatible. Everything they do always works on the Mac. And people forget about that, but they sure as heck don't. And I know that they, you know, it adds up. Those sales definitely add up, especially when you're a PC-only company. You know, Call of Duty 4, that thing's already sold a lot, just a little bit more, you know, water in the well. But for a game like Spore, which is, you know, definitely coming out for the PC, obviously, it sounds like it's definitely going to come out for the Wii, to come out on the Mac, you know, it's definitely a big deal. You know, it's like it's mostly a PC-only game. But again, it's a big deal, but it's sort of not a big deal because you can run Intel games on your Mac already. Finally, next up is Ubi Bowl is going to be returning back to low-budget projects because his latest In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Seize Tale, which cost between $60 and $70 million, only made about $3 million, and he was saying, oh yeah, I'm going to have to make smaller budgeted films. Actually, once again, no, this was nothing more. This is not news. That's old news. That's been known for quite some time. Once again, this was a very elaborate PR stunt, and that's why you listen to the show. So, yes, what happened is that if you read, this was well known, this actually was an article a few months ago about this, is that there's a very famous German tax law. It's actually a tax shelter, and that's how he's been getting financed. What Germans can do is they can take their money and they can invest it into entertainment properties. So, and they can invest it into, I don't know, like a movie. And they can invest 100% of their money, and 100% of their money is written off as taxes. So instead of, you imagine you're very rich and you have $5 million you owe in taxes, well, why would you put $5 million and give it to the government, where instead you could take your $5 million and give it to someone to make a very cool movie, and worst comes to worst, you lose your $5 million, which you were going to lose anyhow. Instead of going to the government, you made a cool movie which with your name on it, and at best, the movie made some money. money, and then you're only taxed on the income. So once again, it was a fantastic tax shelter, and that's how this guy Ubi Ball, very smart guy, you know, for say what you can, it's like this guy found a property that everyone was ignoring. He was able to use it to sell to get, you know, some semi-famous stars, you know, B and C list actors, but people you recognize nonetheless. You know, you've heard of Tara Reid, you know, you've heard of these people. They, you know, that are in their movies. He goes there, he puts together these packages, he gets people to invest in his movies, and then he makes his movies, and if they make money, they do. If they don't, they don't. So be it. But he at least gets to make these fun movies, because that's what he likes to do. So anyhow, this tax shelter has been gone, you know, so they just released this now to get some press release for the movie. You know, why didn't they release this, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, before the movie came out? It was still the same news. Well, because the movie failed and didn't do very well, that's why they're releasing it. But you know what? I have a feeling he's going to be making movies. Like, he says, oh, I'm going to be making small-budget movies. That tax shelter, I have a feeling it's going to come back, from what I've been reading, is that they're just changing the law, because what happened is it didn't quite work out the way they wanted. The whole point of the law was to make it so that people would make movies and keep them in Germany. But what people were doing is that they were making these movies in America, then selling them to Germany for, like, you know, millions of dollars, and then they were selling the rights back from Germany to America for, like, pennies. So there again, it sort of was being abused, this law. So I have a feeling they're going to keep the law, they're kind of rework it a little, and Ubi Ball is going to be making movies. Probably not $70 million movies, but, you know, smaller ones. And for what it's worth, we reviewed the movie on the site. Jason, you know, said it was pretty good. You know, 1.5 stars out of 5, which isn't terrible. Trust me, I can think of 100 movies. Jaws 3D, Weekend at Bernie's, Deuce Bigelow, the list goes on. That were much worse than this movie. You know, this movie was just bad. But it wasn't, or another friend of mine who saw it, he says, it delivered exactly what it advertised, so to speak. So it was not so bad you couldn't watch it, but it was definitely not good, as opposed to Alone in the Dark and some of these others, which they just were unwatchable. Next up is Nintendo has released their 2008 list. It is insanely long. I can't even release it but take a look. It's on a lot of websites. It's everywhere. They're releasing their list, and there are hundreds and hundreds of games coming out for the Wii and the DS for 2008. And sure enough, I've been saying this for a while, is that yeah, this was going to happen. It's, you know, the Wii caught everyone by surprise. Studios weren't ramped up to make games for the Wii or the DS, really. You know, the DS, yeah, they were, but for the Wii, they just were not ready for that. You know, I mean, when the Wii came out, Electronic Arts had one game out for it, and that's it. I mean, they caught. I remember I was there when that happened, and I was hearing flack when that happened. There was definitely rumblings going on in those hallways, because they were not happy about that. And it takes about, you know, 18 months, you know, 12 if you really rush it, about 18 months to 2 years for these games from beginning to end to come out, although the Wii is easier to develop on, so maybe a little bit less. And sure enough, the Wii came out, these companies scrambled, they did everything in their power, and now here we are about, you know, a year to 18 months later, and the games are just going to be flooding the market. And by Christmas 2008, it is just going to be an avalanche. There's going to be so many games coming out for the Wii and the DS that it is just going to be, it's going to be like the old PlayStation days. You guys are going to see, it's going to be totally insane. But on the flip side, it also seems that for some reason, the third-party Wii games just don't seem to do as well as the first-party games. So maybe, hopefully, this, you know, enough good Wii games will come out that this will reverse that trend. And then finally, I have Master Chief is not starring in the Halo movie. So it broke that the Halo script of the movie, which, I don't know, it seems like it's getting made. Who knows anymore? Master Chief is not the main character. In fact, is only a supporting character. And I was reading, once again, a lot of message boards and people going crazy. Oh, this is ridiculous. How can you not have Master Chief as the main character? Blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, no duh, okay? Again, look at this from business point of view. So, first of all, let's take Hollywood. Hollywood is anything if not kind of cowardly. They will usually only come out with movies that are based upon previously successful vehicles. You know, in Hollywood, if you back a movie and it fails, you can lose your job, okay? It is really that crazy. You could spend years and years building yourself up, and you back the wrong movie, you're out of a job. So these guys will not take risks. They really won't. You have something like a Halo movie, which is costing, like, what, $150 million or something crazy to make? You know, it's budgeted at this insane amount. If they're going to – the more money that's involved, the less risk that's going to be taken. So let's look at, you know, Master Chief. Master Chief is a fantastic video game character. It's like a dream come true. There's, you know, his face is covered, so there's less animation for the, you know, them to worry about. You can put yourself into the role because you can picture him however you want to picture him. The guy doesn't really talk very much. It has sort of a very nebulous past. Again, you can just make this whatever you want. You know, there's two ways to really handle this in a video game. You could go the Mass Effect way or the Oblivion way, where you can build your character really elaborately and, you know, make the character your own. I think Mass Effect really did a good job of that because you're able to make your own Shepard and sort of label it your own, but yet Shepard is still going to be an iconic figure from game to game to game. They did an excellent job of that. Or you can go this route, which is the nameless, faceless hero that you identify with, and that is the way they went. That is a very good video game character. For a movie, that is an atrocious character. That is box office poison. You would have your leading character wearing a mask the entire movie that you know nothing about. Unless they were willing to unveil Master Chief and show his face throughout the entire movie, you know, not only will you have a very hard time getting someone credible to play him, but why would you get someone credible to play him if his face is behind the mask? Okay, if you take a look at V for Vendetta, that was a big problem. Read a little bit of the history of that when they were casting that. They had a lot of trouble finding someone to play V. And Hugo Weaving did a fantastic, I mean, I tell you, he did a great, great job with that role. But, you know, that is, you know, it's very, very hard. And actors don't like to do this, okay? Again, my brother's in Hollywood. I talk to them all the time. I worked in Hollywood for a while, too. These guys will fight over one line, okay? If they have four lines in a scene, they want a fifth. If they have five lines, they want a sixth, okay? I'm not saying all actors are like this. I'm just saying just about every single actress is like this, okay? They really want to get their face time. So it's going to be very, very hard to carry a movie, to get, you know, credible people, to get someone who can actually do the emoting and the acting for a main character whose face is covered and they're going to be betting all this money on it. Yeah, no kidding. Of course Master Chief is a side character. No way. He's a supporting actor at best, and even that I'd be surprised. They're going to have someone that you could identify with, that you can emote with, someone that you could actually care about. So, again, all the fanboys out there who are going crazy saying you can't make it for Master Chief, let me tell you, 3 million games, so like Halo 2, Halo 3 sold, you know, about 3.5 million copies. That's a lot for a video game. For a movie, not so much. That's not exactly a great box office take, okay? You're going to need a lot more than that if you want to become a successful movie. So they're going to have to appeal to a lot more than just the fanboys if they want to make back $150 million plus marketing budget, plus, you know, PR and everything else. So, say $200 million, you're going to have to put a lot of asses in the seats to make back that money. So don't expect the Halo movie to do anything too surprising. Let me guarantee you that. So anyhow, that's it for the news. Next up, I'm going to have my interview with the guys from Coltsep Saga.
Interview!
Hey, so Coltsep Saga is a new game coming out for the Xbox 360. I've talked about it on the show before. It is, I find, a very, very cool game. You know, it's sort of a hybrid Monopoly meets Magic the Gathering. It comes out the first week of February, and I was lucky enough to sit down with the localization producer, and we even talk a little bit about what he does, because it's one of those things, like, you hear about these guys all the time, but it's kind of cool to hear what they actually do, where they take a game from Japan or from another country and then, quote, localize it to an American market. And I'm talking to Nobu about Coltsep Saga, and let's listen to the interview. All right, here we go.
Hey, this is Steve. I'm sitting here with Nobu Taguchi, the localization producer for Namco Bandai Games. And I'm also sitting here with Aaron Kruse, the associate product marketing manager. And we're going to be sitting here talking about Coldcept Saga, which is coming out in February for the Xbox 360. How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good, good. So, Nobu, I wanted to talk to you about Coldcept Saga. This is an odd game, to say the least. When you take Monopoly and Magic the Gathering and then put it on a video game system, you don't necessarily think something like that will work, but it does. And I just wanted to, before I went into it, sort of get an idea of what is the game and if you give me an overview of the game itself.
Sure. Well, actually, you kind of actually summed it up really good right there. It's essentially just a merging of CCG games with board games. And we added like the standard fare of strategy that you can actually extract from CCGs with the luck of a dice roll from board games. So it's pretty much what you would kind of expect in the sense that, yes, it's good in the sense that you can have a it appeals to a large, broad audience. You have one hand who actually likes these kind of strategizing, who wants to kind of have a social slant towards these type of games. And on the other hand, you also have people who might not be that adept towards the strategizing side and would like to kind of veer themselves a little bit towards the left portion too. But I think it's a pretty interesting mixture. It's pretty much like you just kind of summed it up right there.
And is this actually a pseudo-remake, re-evolving? I'm not exactly sure what you would call it. The original Coldcept, which came out almost over 4 years ago for the PlayStation 2. But this one is different. If the people who are fans of the original will find something new in this version. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We actually did make sure that there were a lot of new features inside there for those who are already accustomed to the PS2 version. But of course, because the PS2 version was a very solid game in the first place, we wanted to kind of make sure that we kind of keep some of the core mechanics on top of it, which is basically the general gameplay rules inside there. But at the same time, when we revisited the product, we noticed that there were a lot of misbalances along the process, so to speak, where people would actually be doing the same kind of strategizing in order to win the game. So what we did was we essentially revisited all of the cards that we had inside there. We went through the whole entire list to see what can be revamped and what else we can kind of introduce to make this even more balanced for the strategy of the game. But of course, one of the biggest points on top of it is obviously the Xbox Live feature. This online feature is definitely going to take this into a different level for the game series. And we believe that this would actually help increase more people's interest in relation to the game just because of that certain special feature. And again, we also have new maps inside there. We have a lot of new cards, over 100 different new cards to introduce inside there. So overall, I mean, considering what we have inside there, we've also, you know, went to even the extremities of making sure we hit some of the more itchy spots, such as revamping some of the storylines for the single-player mode so that, you know, we don't leave out people who are not that tuned in towards the online capabilities of it. So I think we pretty much hit every single possible aspect on top of there to actually make it a complete upgrade for the PS2 version. And we're pretty sure that the people who've been playing the PS2 will be really happy with this. And for the newcomers to actually come in, it's made very, very well so that they can actually get themselves very, so to say, addicted to this once they get their hands on top of this game.
And this game, as you sort of alluded to, has multiple ways to play it. I mean, there is a single-player sort of storyline where you play against computer AI opponents, and then you obviously can play against your friends and up to three other friends. Is it four people on Xbox Live? Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. We do have that single-player campaign mode. It's the story mode that people can actually play through to kind of challenge some of the well-made AI that we have in there. And we also have both offline and online up to four people to challenge against each other. So if you can gather your friends in your own room to kind of play off of a single 360, or if you want to, of course, jump on live, then you can challenge all the other people around to see how well you can actually stack up against them, too.
So this is sort of an odd game to begin with, but I heard it was a pretty big hit in Japan, even though it's sort of a cult classic, I would say, in the United States. But what made it so, is that true, first of all, is it a big hit in Japan, and sort of what made it so popular, this odd branding?
Well, yeah, actually, in Japan, it's much more of a, there's a much more bigger following in Japan, primarily because I think a lot of the Japanese gamers has some form of affinity towards these type of RPG-ish, strategizing type of games. And also, one of the other key striking factors which attracted a lot of people in Japan was the usage of a lot of famous artists along the game series. And also the music was composed by also a very famous music composer in Japan, Mr. Ito, who actually handled a lot of other game type of music. So there's a lot of appeal from a Japanese standpoint, which actually pushed this game to a certain level beyond just being a niche product in Japan. And when it came down here, it was, well, granted that it was considered a niche product, those who actually got their hands on top of it found out how really, really good this game is. And again, being this time it's on the 360, we're kind of hoping that we can kind of expand this so that we can broaden the audience here. But, you know, everybody can actually enjoy a little bit more of something good, you know, something a little bit different from the side there, so to speak.
So I'm just curious, you know, we hear this all the time. This is obviously a very Japanese game. You can, just from what you said, you know, it's filled with Japanese culture, and you can tell just by playing it that this, you know, by no question and doubt is a game from Japan. But what does, you are obviously a localization producer, and you hear this all the time, but no one really focuses on that. And I'm just curious, you know, what your job is actually to take this game from Japan and then, quote, localize it over to U.S. audiences and what that entails.
Well, actually, the game itself, as far as the localization, first to kind of take it in steps here, when we localize products, we generally try to look at the aspect of what the original content was, and we kind of try to see how we can actually make it appeal towards the U.S. market, at least from my side. And also to make sure that we address any kind of cultural differences within the content. In the case of Concept Saga, though, it was sort of unique in the sense that the producer in Japan made the game very, very globally acceptable, in the sense that he has very little insider, if any, that's attributed to any kind of specific culture. And it really made it a lot more easier for us to actually bring it over to the stateside. But the area that we had to make sure that was going to be functional for our market was obviously the translations and how some of these cards were actually being depicted. And quite frankly, Codesip Saga, with the immense amount of data that's actually involved, we had to go through every single possible aspect of it, trying to make sure that it actually translates well so that our users wouldn't really get confused upon actually getting their hands on top of the product. So overall, the localization was quite a challenge in the sense that, yes, we had to kind of actually look at the game, look at it in different perspectives, look at it from different kind of viewpoints from all different sorts of ages and cultures to see if the language itself was actually going to be well-tuned for the U.S. play market here.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. How long does that take, by the way, from, like, you know, from taking the Japanese version and then going through the whole process and making it, you know, releasable in the U.S.?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, we usually kind of work off of depending on the actual volume of it. We wanted to make sure everything was really sterile this time. So usually on a ballpark basis, we kind of look at it about, say, anywhere between 3 to 6 months. And we just kind of try to see if we can graft it any shorter or longer, depending on how well the content is actually been provided here.
So for Codesip Saga, there's 500 cards, I believe, in the game, but you only start out with a small handful, and then by playing the single-player game, you can unlock new cards, which you get even if you lose against the computer. So is there other ways to get new cards? Like, how can you eventually get, you know, all 500 and be able to, you know, customize and build, you know, decks of your liking without just having to be limited by the card set?
Well, actually, in total, just to kind of give a little bit more accurate number here for our audience here, we actually have a total count of 486 cards. I don't think we've actually went into the exact details of it before, but yeah. But we have 486 cards inside there. And like you said, they are unlocked as you win or lose battles during the single-player campaign mode. But other than that, you can also acquire them when you go online. And if you play with your friends offline as well, you can still get cards from that process as well. And there are some cards inside there that are special unlockables, which you can pretty much only attain if you actually play the single-player campaign mode as well. So those are some of the main ways of actually getting it. The other more interesting way to actually acquire it, which a lot of people have been expressing interest about, is the betting feature on top of it that's existent on the game.
Oh, can you explain that? That's actually the first I've heard of, the betting feature. Is this sort of like Magic the Gathering, where originally you were supposed to ante a card and then give that card to someone if you lost?
Yep, that's pretty much the general concept of it. It's actually made a little bit more simpler in the sense that when you set up matches, whether it's offline or online, what you would do is there's actually a screen where you would actually determine different sets of criteria and parameters to work off of. And we actually have a feature inside there where you can actually wager the number of cards to be traded between the winner and the loser. And we kind of made it so that you can set X number of cards, and those, after the match is completed, by a set random amount, they're decided by the computer as far as what you actually gained and what you actually kind of lost. So it is an interesting betting feature that we have inside there, and pretty much I think that kind of follows suit to what a lot of people actually wanted to know about, because a lot of card game players do actually use something similar to the betting feature that we have in game.
So obviously one thing that's very prevalent in these collectible card games is boosters and, you know, expanding upon the card base. I mean, with, you know, having such a carefully balanced game that's now gone through two consoles, is there any chance that this will have boosters or expansions in the future, whether on Xbox Live Marketplace or even through expansions, or is that still being worked on and thought about?
Well, right now, we're not really thinking about it, not as yet. One of our main point of concerns that we did have was exactly what you mentioned, which is these booster packs. For one point of argument that we were actually going through quite heatedly was to determine whether we should actually include boosters and make some form of additional spice for those who actually have life. But the argument that we've heard from many different parties was that having boosters would actually make an uneven playing field for those who opt to not have those, whereas others may want to kind of, so to say, juice their decks that they have. So in order to kind of make sure that our balance actually works out very well, from the fourth set, we just included every single card that we could imagine for the game, and just kept it as simple unlockables that each player can unlock on their side, and kind of prohibited ourselves from making actual additional stuff for now. But again, these are all kind of negotiable. We're still kind of eagerly looking forward to how the game will actually proceed. We're looking very eagerly towards all the different kind of positive and negative comments that we might receive from the game. And after maybe further evaluation, although I can't guarantee anything, it might be a possible subject that we can kind of work on in the future for the game.
So I'm just curious, you know, we saw Puzzle Quest, you know, come out of sort of nowhere and become an extremely popular game. It's a game that's not exactly like this one, but it's similar in the sense that it's mixing genres. And, you know, you're starting to see, you know, Carcassonne has done very well on Xbox Live Arcade. You know, they're coming out with Talisman in a few months from now. You know, I always said in the show and on the site that, you know, board games and even collectible card games are a good use for Xbox Live and even just Xbox in general with the chat features, with the video features. And it seems in my mind like almost a no-brainer. Do you think that, you know, you guys are sort of going to approach this and do this a little bit more often? It's like Coldstep is sort of the first step of this becoming more acceptable and more of these board game / collectible card game / puzzle games are going to start coming out more for consoles and not just, you know, handhelds or PCs or what have you, or even just pen and paper? As did you feel like that this is, you know, you're kind of using this as a testing ground to see if this is a more, you know, with the PlayStation 2 version, it was a hit, but it was only a hit with, you know, people who are into the genre and can only play with their friends in the same room, as opposed to this is where now you have everyone in the world. I'm sort of rambled there, but I think you get the idea of the question.
Right. Well, actually, yep. We're always looking forward to all sorts of different kind of prospective capabilities that we can bring over for the U.S. market. And, of course, if Coldstep Saga is as successful as what we do sincerely believe it to be, then, of course, we'll be working with generally the public and everybody else to make sure that we bring in games or create games that generally what people want, essentially. If people want certain genres of games that they're interested in, by all means, we're always open-eared. We're always looking towards the public opinion to make sure what we can actually find. And at the same time, that is actually one of our goals, obviously, which is to make sure that we bring in products or create products which actually appeal towards the general market that we have down here. So yes, pretty much this is just one of the very few out of many that we have that I can say is really innovative, and this is just possibly just something to kind of sit the ground off of, and hopefully, yes, we do become a company where we can bring in all sorts of different kind of capabilities towards not only 360, but all the first-party platforms to see what we can kind of bring in, you know? So, yeah, we're always open for this.
So I have to ask this because I've gotten a lot of questions about this, and tournaments. You would have to think, you know, it's nice now that we have Xbox Live and we'll be able to play against, you know, other human beings and friends. You have to think that this will go to a tournaments type of setup. Do you have any plans for that, or is it too soon to talk about?
Yeah. Well, actually, it is something that we were kind of thinking about. It's still in the house, so to speak. We're still kind of evaluating and measuring different kind of facets of it. And, of course, when we do have something already preset, then we'll be definitely making a definitive transfer to the public to make sure that, you know, everybody is well known about what we're going to be planning. But for the time being, I think we'll keep it under wraps as we're still evaluating, so to speak.
So one thing I have noticed, and you'll even see this in a lot of the reviews, is they will say that the AI is extremely tough. And, in fact, most reviews say, they start off with saying that you will lose your first game. And even in the demo, it is surprisingly tough. And I have to give credit to the game balance, is that you can be winning the game handily. You lose one very expensive territory to the computer or your opponent, and then you lose the game very quickly. I mean, the game can flip on a dime very fast. What is going on? How come that AI is so freaking difficult?
Well, actually, one of the things for, just to say for the demo portion at least, one of the things that we did not want to do was introduce any specific AI which would be sort of like handing out victories to everybody who'll be playing the game. That's primarily based on the fact that a lot of gamers out there, granted that yes, they may have trouble playing the game initially, after playing maybe like two or three rounds of the game, they'll get a gist of exactly what's actually going on. And they'll be naturally strategizing from there to actually make the winning curve more towards their side. So again, we wanted to make sure that for the demo portion, we included something inside there, an AI which would give you sufficient challenge so that it's not like you're just playing a standard demo and you're just winning everything left and right, but something that will make you kind of feel what you would actually experience in the game along the process. And of course, as you play the game, you start unlocking more cards along the process. You get to customize your decks naturally. You also notice that there's different kind of maps in there which you can actually look at to base your strategies on. The AI is also, each one is very distinct, so the more you play, the more you start understanding exactly how things are actually moving. And despite all of that, we also still wanted to add in that extra luck of the dice roll inside there to make sure that, you know, we give a fair chance of actually doing one of those grand oustings that you can do against an opponent even though you're way ahead along the process. So we just wanted to make sure that the balance was attuned for both types of gamers along the process. But at the same time wanted to make it so that it's not just luck that's actually controlling it, but the more strategy that you have that you actually place into the game, the more the luck will start favoring on your side. So in that sense, I believe the balance is really well made, and trust me, again, the first, second time, yes, some people may lose along the process. It's very possible. I mean, it could be just a few slips of the moves or just maybe a few oversights. But again, after you play it for a few rounds, you'll start seeing how well tuned it is, and you'll start noticing, and you will notice dramatically that you're starting to think of it in a form that you're actually strategizing, not just playing cards randomly on the board.
So two more quick questions, and I'll probably wrap this up. So the first one is, from the original game, you probably had one of the strangest, weirdest characters I've ever seen in video game history, the Talking Scepter, which not only was a bizarre character, but kind of a weird animation, too. I mean that in a loving way, but it definitely was odd, to say the least. Is he back this time?
I'm kind of assuming you're pointing towards the staff guy.
Yeah, the staff guy. This is the staff.
Ah, okay. Well, let's just say that we have a number of hidden characters in the game. And some of those you'll have to kind of, we'll just leave it as, we'll let you kind of search for them, but we do have a plethora of many, many distinct characters inside there. And some you'll probably adore towards day's end. Some you'll probably just hate, god-awful hate them. But again, we wanted to mix a lot of different kind of characters to make sure that they also match with the type of AI that we actually had in-game to kind of reflect the kind of strategies they will actually play against you, too. So, yes, I think you could kind of look forward to seeing the different kind of characters we have inside there. And again, you might see some special characters inside there that could be sort of like a guest appearance from the previous game also.
And Aaron said you're really, really good at the game, Nobu. So give us some strategies, because we're going to be playing against you probably soon. So.
sure thing. Of course, of course you have to kind of start building up from what kind of cards that you have. But again, why spoil the whole entire fun of giving exact details as to what to kind of set up in your hand? Because there is no real single strategy that will trump everybody along the process. What I kind of recommend for first comers or even veterans alike, sort of as a refresher, is that because the game is a strategy based off of a magic that you have to collect in order to win the game, I like to put economy into the picture. In other words, you will have a lot of aggressive people, and you will also have very passive people when they actually play their cards and play their strategies. But if you can find the right balance as far as what to actually keep, what to stay off of, and essentially if you kind of think prior to where you want to actually strategize off of, that alone will expand any player's imagination further and beyond to make sure that their winning percentages will also go up along the process. And again, for my side, if you want something a little bit more exact, you could do something like what I would do, which is I don't really grab a lot of territories. I just like to, fortify one or two specific properties, and the rest is pretty much, well, I guess that pretty much after sums it up. I just wait for everybody to fall straight on top of it, and they'll be pinged.
Yeah, I tried that strategy, and the computer seems to have the magic ability to roll right past my my very expensive territories, and I seem to have the ability to land on theirs all the time. So maybe I just have bad luck when I'm playing. But
yeah, and just as a form of reassurance, I know a lot of people do bring this out, and actually this applies for any game, really, that AI essentially cheats. But if it's of any reassurance to the public and to the audience, the computer does not really cheat. Everything is all just basically what you would expect from general programming. It's all numbers and luck. And, of course, we do have certain strategies in there and cards in there to kind of help you so that you could bend the luck towards your side as well. So overall, I think everybody will have a lot of fun playing the game, and, you know, the more you play into it, the more you'll see how deep and intense it is, and the more you'll be addicted, just like how I've been addicted by this game.
And so the game comes out February 5th, in the U.S.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Nobu. I look forward to playing you guys and having my ass handed to me very quickly. So.
Oh, come now. And we'll be looking forward to seeing people actually trip me along the process, too.
All right. Well, thanks a lot,
Nobu. All right. Thank you.
Hey, once again, thanks so much, Nobu. And I'm also going to have a contest where I am going to give away 4 free copies of Cold Sip Saga as soon as it comes out. So listen to the next segment in the contest where I'm going to go through the details of what to do. So let's get right to the contest.
Name that game!
Hey there, welcome to Name That Game, where I would normally have a game that you would name, but this week I'm changing around the contest again. I might kind of change how this works in general because I'm starting to get some pretty cool prizes, such as Namco Bandai was nice enough to give us 4 copies of Cold Sip Saga to give out, so I'm going to give away 4 free copies to some lucky people. I'll give you the games right when the game comes out, so you'll get it right around the same exact time, and how you enter couldn't be simpler. This is all you need to do. All I want you to do is go to the website, go to the comments section, and this is all you need to do. You just need to leave a comment, tell me your forum name, very important, you need to tell me your forum name, and you just need to tell me what real-life object you would like to turn into a creature to fight for you. So the reason for that is, and why, and the reason for that is because in Cold Sip Saga, the whole point of the game is that you have these cards, and the cards sort of are inanimate objects that turn into objects and fight for you. So, you know, you could have they have like monsters, but you can have a chair, and then the chair attacks you. Or you could have a lamp, or a lamp attacks you. Or a clock. Well, you could tell I'm in a room with a lot of furniture, but you get the idea. So give me, you know, again, go to the area. All you have to do is post your forum name, so I know who you are, and a real-life object that you would like to turn into a creature and battle for you, and why. That's it. That's all you need to do. And this game will go on so the game comes out on the 5th. So a few days before, I'm going to have another show. I'll announce the winners, either right on the website or on the show itself. And the best 4... will get picked. Actually, not the best 4. It's going to be random, to be honest. Maybe I'll pick 2 that are very cool and 2 that are random. You know what? I'm still not sure how I'm going to pick them. So just make sure you do something really cool, okay? And no copies, okay? No copies. So the quicker you're up there, the quicker you come up with an original idea. So there you go. Free copy of Cold Sip Saga for the Xbox 360. And then you can play me online and beat me. All right, so let's go to show mail. So next up is show mail, where I listen to your answers. Oh, yeah, by the way, if you do leave a comment in the contest area, and for some reason, the comments are pretty good. They 95% of the time will always take your comments 99% of the time. But for some reason, if it moderates you and you're having trouble, just send me an email, and I'll make sure you're entered. I'll put the comment in myself, because very so often the comment system will think you are spam, especially if you put a lot of links in or do something crazy or curse or go nuts like that. It's going to automatically moderate your comments. So let's get to the questions, and let's listen to the first one from Rob.
Hello, Gaming Steve. This is Rob, a.k.a. Sketch Rob from the forums. I had 2 quick questions for you. 1, Wrath of the Lich King, if you had any secret info you could divulge about that. I know you're all tight with Blizzard, so it'd be pretty cool to get anything on that game. And 2, if you would ever consider doing a review on an older game called The Neverhood. It was a clay animation point-and-click adventure. It came out in the late 90s. I'm a big fan of clay animation and a big fan of point-and-click adventures, and that game had both. So thank you very much for coming back, Gaming Steve. Glad to hear you, and look forward to your next podcast. Bye.
So, hey, Rob. Yeah, any secret info on Wrath of the Lich King? My friends, I do have a million friends at Blizzard. I talk to them a fair amount. For some reason, I have not been talking about Wrath of the Lich King. You know, we talked a huge amount about World of Warcraft, and we talked a lot about the last expansion, but not this one. I wish to God, I probably should have called them and talked to them beforehand, but you know what? They're not, this sounds weird, but my friends, they're kind of a little Blizzard, a little wowed out. I know that sounds weird, and they probably don't want to hear that, but these guys, they've been playing this game now for something like 7 or 8 years, okay? They've been playing this game a long time, and they themselves, I think, are getting a little out-wowed over there. So, no, unfortunately, I don't know anything about the game. I'm truly, truly sorry, but I will try to find out some dirt for you. And Neverhood, the clay game. Yeah, of course I remember Neverhood, man. It was a great game. It was cool. There was a time where they were fooling around with like clay animation and cell animation. You know, there was that time around then. Actually, something kind of put me off of clay animation, and there was a game called Clay Fighter, if you remember that. It was a fighting game using clay, and it sounded really cool at the time, and I even rented it from Blockbuster and gave it a try. And then I found this thing. If you, like, somehow pushed the joystick down to the right and kept hitting the punch button, you became completely undefeatable, and you just beat every single enemy. And I remember I did that the whole game. It's like within 5 minutes, I figured this out. I got all the way to the end. I finished it, and I was so dissatisfied with that experience that it kind of soured me on all clay animation after that. So it's weird how that sort of stuff happens too. You know, you ever eat something and then get sick, and then you never want to eat it again? Same thing. It's like now clay animation in video games has kind of been spoiled because of Clay Fighter. But Neverhood was very cool. Yeah, it was cool, but again, it was just a gimmick in my mind too. It's like, you know, anything to make your game stand out from the crowd. And although it was cool at the time, I'd be curious to see how it stood up and when played today. And it almost seemed like a niche title from the beginning. So, thanks for your mail. And next, I got Patrick, who writes me like every single week, man. But keep it up.
Hey, Steve. I was wondering if you've ever heard of or played a game called The Incredible Machine. I ask because it's one of my favorites and has some of the most enjoyable gameplay in any game I've ever played. Every person I know who's played it absolutely loves it. That'll be all. Thanks.
So, hey, Pat, man. So, did I hear about The Incredible Machine? Of course I've heard. I love that game. You crazy, man? I love that game. The Incredible Machine, fantastic game, Sierra Online game. Came out with like a gazillion sequels. It was, you're building these Rube Goldberg devices. You'd get a limited number of items, and you'd have to get, you know, like a ball from one point to another. I think it was a ball. It's been a while since I played it, and you would have to just build these contraptions. And believe it or not, as good as that game is, there's even a game before that, and it's called Robot Odyssey, and that was for the Apple II Plus. And that game, it was funny. I was actually, I wrote to Pat afterwards and told him, yeah. And then I looked up Robot Odyssey, and it was on one of the Abandonware sites. And on the bottom it said, if you like Robot Odyssey, you will also like this game. And it had The Incredible Machine. So a coincidence, amazing coincidence. Robot Odyssey, you could try it. It's super hardcore, though. We're talking about a game from like 1982, 83. But it was the game that taught me circuitry, is that you actually had to take robots and have them navigate mazes, and then you would have to use like AND gates and OR gates and NOT gates to actually build circuits to have your robots navigate these mazes. So it kind of introduced me to circuitry 101, kind of introduced me to how computers work, and I didn't even know it at the time. And it's tough. I mean, it's a tough game. I'd be curious to see how electrical engineers do in this game. They probably will blow through it like it's nothing. But Incredible Machine is a fantastic game. I'm kind of surprised that seems like the perfect type of game to come out for the Wii. Actually, that is like a handmade game because you can use the controller. It's fun. It's a puzzle game. Heck, even the DS, that'd be a perfect game for it. You know, or really PSP, any system. But, you know, it's sort of a casual type fun game. And I'm kind of surprised that's not out again. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, it's easy to find The Incredible Machine. It's all over the place. Check it out, especially if you like puzzle games. And the graphics don't matter. You know, it's a simple game with simple graphics. Well, it's not a simple game, but it's simple graphics. But the puzzles are just as challenging now as they were when it first came out. Thanks, Pat. Next up is Chris.
Steve, my question concurs with your trend in show mail about questions being more about board games than video games. While you've explained how to get into the video game industry, how does one get into the board gaming industry? Do you have any kind of advice or knowledge about the industry that you would like to share? Thank you.
Hey, Chris. So, yeah, board game industry, that's kind of an odd question, but I'm going to take it, and I'll tell you why. It's because one of my listeners for the Gaming Steve podcast is owns Ape Games, and he actually just published, you know, The Order of the Sticky Game is his. And on top of that, a few of my friends also publish games. Guys from Goodman Games, Joseph Goodman, he does, you know, he plays D20 type games. I have friends who just did the Chaotic collectible card game. I know those guys. So I know a few people in this sort of type of industry, and I know a bit about how this is done. I'm by no means an expert at this, but I, you know, just through them and talking to them, I know how it's done. For instance, the guy from Ape Games, the guy works at HP during the day and designs and sells board games at night. So you can do both. However, don't expect to make money unless you're very lucky at this. It's very hard. There's a couple ways to go about this. If you actually want to come out with your own game, it's really not that tough. Design a game, first of all. Test it. I can't emphasize that enough. You know, just make up fake, you know, game tiles, a prototype, test, and test some more. You know, play with a lot of people, get a lot of, you know, feedback. Then you can, you know, have it designed yourself or get some artists to do it. There's, you know, getting artists, that's a whole other thing. But you can find, there's, you know, Board Game Geek and such. You can find people who will do art for you. And then you have to get it printed. There's a couple of companies in China. Those are probably the best. They take a long time. I mean, it could take you a long time in China. But, you know, Days of Wonder, all the big boys, they do it. Some in Germany, most of them do it in China. And they'll do everything for you. And one of those big box games with all the components might cost you, in the end, maybe $10 to $15 in parts. Then you have to find a distributor. And then from there, you can then sell the game. You know, so again, it sounds like a lot of work, but it's actually, when you break it up into those pieces, not quite so bad. There's actually also companies out there that will do this entire thing for you. You know what? I didn't prepare. If you get the latest issue of Knuckle Bones magazine, there's a big article about this company that does nothing except make games for people. Now, that's going to be a lot more expensive because they will take a piece of your pie, big time, because, you know, they're doing everything for you. So if you do it yourself, it's a lot more work, but you get to keep a lot more of the rewards. The other way is to actually try to have your game published. That's very, very, very hard. Again, what you need to do is, you know, you have to go to one of the publishers, and really the best way to do it is, you know, make a prototype of your game. You have to have a prototype working so they can try it out. Ticket to Ride is very famous. You know, you guys probably all heard it. I actually saw and played the prototype game when I was at Days of Wonder, if you remember. I did an interview with them about a year and a half ago. I spoke to Mark, one of my podcasts, and he showed me the prototype for that game. Like, even that super successful game, had he had some trouble selling it at first. So if you make a prototype, you bring it to some publishers, you go to like the Gen Con or one of the board game, you know, conventions, and try to just, you know, sell it. I mean, the hard sell. And if they can have fun with it in 5 minutes and see potential, they'll let you know. And if they don't, you know, it's the old, can you pitch and sell something in an elevator ride? Video games, movies, same thing. If you can't sell your idea after like two or three rounds and make it so simple that they can play it, you probably won't sell your first game. And you might have an idea for an elaborate, crazy opus of a game that's amazingly complex. That will not be your first game unless you publish it yourself. It's just that simple. You have to start off and just, the first step is just get published. Same thing in video game industry. I say this to people who want to get into it. It's like, oh, you know, I have this great idea for a monster crazy game. Okay, that's great. There's about 1,000 of those every minute that are being pitched. That there's no shortage of ideas, okay? You have to come up, just get yourself in the door, then worry about making your masterpiece. That's step two. So hopefully that was a little bit helpful. I could probably give you a little bit more links if you write to me, Chris, and do a little more research. But also go to BoardGameGeek.com. That place is great, and there's a lot of topics on this. It's you know, a lot of people want to do this. And again, don't kill yourself, because you're going to have to invest, you know, $10,000-$20,000 probably, you know, even for a short run, you know, for a decent game. So try to just get your name out there and then work it from there. So next up, I have regular written questions. Let's see. I have BJ who wrote me, this isn't so much about gaming, but you mentioned writer strike in the last podcast and how it's putting so many people out of work. I'm wondering how you feel the fact that the AMPTP walked out of negotiations twice, and what you think there's any hope for them to return to the negotiating table anytime soon. Now for an actual gaming question in relation to your question from your last podcast, someone wrote in and wondered what happened to Freelancer and Wing Commander. You answered quite well for those specific games, but what about the genre as a whole? Is there any hope for Wing Commander-style game in the foreseeable future? BJ. So, yeah, first of all, the writer's strike. Yeah, the writer's strike... Well, as you probably heard, the directors actually came to an agreement, which will probably make it tougher. Yeah, I feel, the writers, I'm not blaming the writers in any way, shape, or form. In fact, the writers, they do deserve to get compensated for internet work. You know, if big business had it their way, that the producers and, the producers would have it so that they get paid for pretty much nothing. And the writers want compensation for everything. So it's... It's tricky, but you know what? In a weird way, the video games are prevailing because the video games are just making more and more money and selling more because people now have less to do and they're switching over. You know, my biggest competition for the TV instead of playing video games is TV. What a surprise there. Biggest competition for TV is TV. So when there's no TV to watch, I'm going to be playing video games and I'm going to be buying more video games. The only thing that's a little unfair is that writers can still work. You know, they can pick at the lines and they can still write. Sure, they're not publishing and they're making money, but when the Writers Guild strike ends, boy, there's going to be a lot of scripts out there, I tell you that. But, you know, other people in the industry, like, you know, people who are like wardrobe or makeup or craft services, things like that, those guys aren't so lucky. So, you know, it's a slippery slope as to which side to take on that. And a lot of these guys are writing video games now, so maybe we'll actually start seeing better writing in video games. And then as for Wing Commander Freelancer, yeah, you know, those type of games have seemed to, you know, these games go through... Games go through cycles, you know, like you'll see certain types of games. You know, first-person shooters were really, really big on the PC, and they've always kind of been big, but then they kind of faded. And now, finally, with the success of Halo, we're starting to see more and more really, and then Call of Duty 4, which was, you know, a monster hit. And the numbers for this year, the number one game was Halo 3. The number two game was Call of Duty 4. You know, you have your number one or two games for the year for on, you know, our shooters. You know, that's what you're seeing right now. So eventually, one day, someone's going to come up with the idea, let's make another really cool space game. It's going to come out, it's going to be a monster hit, and then everyone's going to make their space game. So it just kind of goes in cycles. You know, it's you know, the same way, you know, TV shows do that, movies do that, books do that, video games do that. It's just a cyclical process. And right now, you know, first-person shooters are big, casual games are big, puzzle games are starting to get bigger again, you know, with the massive success of, you know, Puzzle Quest and a few others. We're starting to see, and also that they're cheap and easy to do, and they fall into, you know, they fall really nicely with the Wii and casual gaming marketplace, that you're seeing a lot more puzzle games. So one day, and I can't tell you when, could be tomorrow, could be a year from now, could be 10 years from now, we will see a resurgence of these games. But, you know, it's like trying to call something that's happening in culture. It's just very, very hard to do. And more importantly, it's going to be hard for this to take a foothold because someone has to sell it. So imagine I'm an EA, I'm a producer. I have a really great idea for, you know, a freelancer type game. Well, there's no other really freelancer type games out there, so there's no history of success in the last couple of years. So why am I going to come out with this game? So, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of hard to come out. You know, it's hard, they call it like the first penguin and the game developer awards, like who's that first penguin in the water? And because if, you know, that penguin will either be safe or be eaten. So that's the same thing. Who's going to be the first one to jump in and come out with the next freelancer type game? And I don't know, hopefully somebody. Next up, I have Lobster, who wrote me. I got a question for you. I'm a huge fan of the Nipcom Ipkim games, particularly Daisaka, so I was dismayed to hear that Daisaka 3 is going to be on the PlayStation 3. As a small studio, N1 has never done any cross-platform games, unless you count porting Daisaka 1 to the PSP. So it seems unlikely that Daisaka 3 will be coming out for anything but the PlayStation 3. So tell me what we're looking at here, Steve. Is this some sort of mythical company loyalty we're seeing by N1 trying in some little way to help out PlayStation 3 sales? Did Sony say no one's allowed to make PlayStation 2 games anymore? Or you make a little boy's dream come true and saying that Daisaka 3 will be on another system? I don't want to buy a PlayStation 3. Thank you, Lobster. So Lobster, yeah, will Daisaka come out for the PlayStation 3 as well as the Xbox or the Wii? Maybe? Yeah, I'll tell you what's going on there. Yeah, there's a couple of things. I'm not sure of this particular case, but yeah, Sony can pay off companies to keep games exclusive. It happens all the time. Maybe they did. I don't know. There's no news on this, so I wasn't able to find anything saying that, you know, they bought exclusive rights for this. That's a very, very real possibility. The second possibility is that, you know, these are companies. These aren't just, I'm just going to decide I'm going to make a game for the Wii. You just don't do that. I mean, if they say, okay, you know what, I'm going to come out with a game for the Wii, you have to now, again, look at the business point of view. I always say that. Look at the business point of view. Okay, now we have to get a Wii development kit. We have to get that from Nintendo. You know, those aren't free. You have to spend money for that. And then once we get that, we have to get the programmers, and we're going to have to do the work to do the porting and all of that. You know, it's not as simple as just, we're just going to make a Wii game. Poof. We have a Wii game. You know, if that was the case, then everything would be cross-platform and there wouldn't be a big problem here. But it's not the case. It's hard to do these games. It's especially hard to go from the PlayStation to the Wii, or the PlayStation to the Xbox isn't quite as difficult. But the Xbox isn't as popular in Japan, so, you know, they would probably go to the Wii if they went to anything. Ironically, these games have graphics that would work really well on the Wii because they're not like doing crazy processors. So why they're sticking to the PlayStation, they probably already have a lot of tools developed for the PlayStation. Maybe they have an exclusive agreement with Sony. Maybe they have a lot already invested and there are a Sony house and they just want to stick with that they're comfortable with it. You know, who knows? You know, I actually talked to the guys about Cold Step Saga, and I found it very odd that this incredibly Japanese game that was very, very successful in Japan was coming out for the Xbox 360 of all things. That seemed like the weird, you know, it's like, why are you coming out a Japanese game on a system that is not selling well in Japan? That makes no sense. And they went and explained that, you know, that is a system that does very well overseas. And I'm kind of paraphrasing that, you know, they felt that, you know, the Xbox Live capabilities were really good and they would get the best, you would get the best gameplay, you know, through the Xbox Live system and through the Xbox itself. So that's what was their decision. Yeah, the Wii sells a lot more. And yeah, the PlayStation 3 has a bigger install base as well in Japan. But, you know, not necessarily the other places in the world. And also, that's, you know, they don't have as good of a service when it comes to live. So, you know, and playing over the internet. So that was their decision. And agree with it or disagree with it, that's their decision to make. Same thing here. You know, these guys, they might just like, you know, Sony. They might be loyal to it. You know what? I see companies. I work with one of my good friends. He has a company. And let me tell you, he does all of his work is for PCs, okay? He does nothing but PC gaming and PC products. And they do everything on a Macintosh. His entire firm has Macintoshes. And that's because the guy who owns the place loves Macs. He loves them. He has nothing but everyone has an iPhone. He's got Mac everything. And he was just going on. He was talking to me. Couldn't wait what was going on in Macworld. And, you know, he bought the new slim one the minute it was announced. You know, he's like a Mac fiend. But they do PC. and they actually have to run boot camp on their Mac so they can run PCs on their Macs. So who knows? You know, I can say that it was very simple. They just decided, you know, to do it. But there could be a million reasons. So finally, I got an email from Bill, and he writes me, my wife bought me a PSP for Christmas. I've been thinking about picking up a game for it called Dungeons & Dragons Tactics. The reviews are a mixed bag, and it seems like people are put off by heavy emphasis on the D20 rules. As a longtime D&D player, I'm actually quite interested in the game, just wondering if it's really worthwhile. If you, with you being such a D&D and video game fan, I thought you'd have a chance to check out the game and ask. Keep up the great podcast, Chris. Or sorry, cheers, Bill. Where'd I get Chris from? Cheers look like Chris to me. Bill. Anyhow, Dungeons & Dragons Tactics. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of D&D, and I love D20, but that doesn't necessarily mean you want to actually play D20 on your video game. The two don't, you know, same reason movies don't always work as video games. This doesn't necessarily work out that well. I would definitely try it. Maybe get it used or rent it if you can, you know, through Gamefly or something before you commit to it. You know, it's not a bad game. But let me put it this way. If you really love D20 and you really love Dungeons & Dragons and you're really patient, you will like this game. It's hard for me to say because every game has its audience. It's one thing I like to do on game FAQs is I find like the most weird, esoteric games that you never think about and look at the FAQs and look at the guides and just see how much love and detail someone put into that guide for that particular game that nobody played. Because there's something out there for everyone. And this is one of those games, is that it seemed like a really good idea at the time. It's not a bad game, but it is a game for a very certain type of audience. And I am right in there, because I like a lot of games that a lot of people probably don't like, you know, like Orcs and Elves. A lot of people hated that game. Crappy graphics, simplistic gameplay, you know, nothing fantastic. Why is this game getting such good reviews? You have to, you know, if you grew up in an era with Eye of the Beholder and, you know, you almost, to me, it's almost nostalgic and it's fun from that point of view. But I can imagine if you're a new gamer and you're playing this, to you, it's just crud. The same reason that, you know, your parents might watch I Love Lucy episodes and you think they're dumb. You know, it just is. You just, for some reason, you're wired to like that. So give it a try. See if you enjoy it. Or just, you know, take the plunge and buy it. But, you know, if you're not sure, I always say try it, rent it if possible. You know, especially a game like that. That game is so big that you would never finish it. So you could rent it and save your game and then buy it if you like it and just continue where you last left off. So once again, if you have any questions, feel free to send them to me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I'll put them on the air most likely. If you send me an audio question, try to save it, you know, MP3 or something, 30 seconds or less. If you send me a transcript of what your question is, that always helps. And with that, let's get to final thoughts.
Gaming Steve's final thoughts.
So right now we're kind of in the doldrums of gaming. You know, it was like right after Christmas, there was, you know, there was a lot of games that came out right before Christmas and, you know, right after Thanksgiving, before Thanksgiving. And then everyone's playing their games. Everyone's finishing up Mass Effect, finishing up Call of Duty 4, you know, finishing up Mario Galaxy and such, etc. And then the first 3 weeks, nothing. And it's been quiet. It's actually been kind of nice. I hate to say it. It's like kind of nice that I can just sit here and play games. I'm actually playing Uncharted on the PlayStation 3. That game is freaking fantastic. I didn't quite finish it enough to do a review, but wow, what a good game. I am stunned. This game, it came out, I mean, I didn't read anything about this game. Really, really good game. If you like platformers, I'd actually almost say this is worth buying a PlayStation 3 for. Graphics are good. Gameplay is great. Music's really good. They do really good things with the music. I'm really liking this game a tremendous amount. Surprised, too, because I had it for a while, and I just, for some reason, was hesitant to put it in. But as soon as I put it in, I was like, whoa, this is good, and now can't stop playing it. But yeah, we got Days of Ruin coming out next week. We got the flood of games is about to start once again, sort of like the break time is over. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then as for the site itself, you know, I'm still hiring new people. I'm always going to be looking for new writers and new, you know, contributors to the site. Working on a new design for the site. Now we're on the new server. I know some people complained, you know, the commenting was a little slow, things like that. Should be lightning fast now. Again, the new server is, you know, it's a dedicated machine just for the site, nothing but. If it keeps getting bigger and bigger, I'll just get another server for it. I'll load balance it and go to 2 or 3. We'll just keep growing it. Whatever, you know, whatever the site needs, we'll just keep adding to it to make sure that it can keep up with the traffic. So, you know, make sure you're on the site and contributing. Take a look for the new layout. Probably not for another month. We're still working on it and then implementing it. The lay of the server took a little bit longer and sort of pushed everything back a bit. And then for the show itself, I'm actually going to be busy. Actually, GDC is coming up, and then I have the D&D Experience, and then Icon, and then Comic-Con, and then the summer. So, oof. It's one of those things, I look forward to the conventions, but they're a lot of work too. But GDC is just in a few weeks, and that is, you know, without E3, that's going to be where the really big announcements are. Of course, I don't know. I mean, after last year, like, you know, it was real exciting. I thought Sony really had their act together when they announced Home, and then it's never, you know, materialized. A Little Big Planet, and never really materialized. So, you know, and I'm not saying, trust me, Microsoft's just as guilty. When they announced XNA, and like 2-3 years went by before they actually brought that thing out. So, you know, the only one that seems to really announce things and then have them come out really close to right away is Nintendo. They just seem to announce things at GDC and then either hand them out right then and there or just have them out, you know, within a very, you know, short amount of time after they announce it. So I take all the GDC announcements with a grain of salt, but who knows, with this year's E3 still up in the air and all the craziness, who knows what's going on. I imagine GDC is going to be where we're going to hear really big announcements. And Spore 2 should hopefully, finally, really have a big presence. I've not heard a peep. I know nothing officially. I'm going to write them and make sure that I'm in on all those, you know, talks and any private showings, because that game, from everything I hear, is coming out this year. When, no one knows, but that thing is just about done. So finally, we get to see this thing. I actually went online, saw some videos of it. It almost seems too good to be true, that game. It really does. It's one of those games I can just see. I have friends who play Civilization to this day, you know, nonstop. You know, they just play it over and over and over and over again. They just never get bored. They play it hundreds and hundreds of times and have a bad, bad, bad feeling Spore is going to do that. It's going to be one of those games you just will never stop playing it, because you're never going to run out of things. It's always going to be new. It's always going to be interesting. They're always going to have expansions, of course. So it's just going to be the game that sucks the life out of you. And you know what? Oh, man. It's one of those things I dread and look forward to at the same time. I think a lot of you know what I'm talking about. Anyhow, long show as usual. Wrapping this up, once again, don't forget the contest. Leave me your name and your forum name and what object you'd like to have turn into a real life monster to fight for you and why, and give me that info and you can win a free copy of Cold Sip Saga, and then play me online, man. It's going to be a fun game. Until then, have a good gaming week. I'll talk to you guys. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. If you have a question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. Until next week, always beware the dark side. Or, if you're bored, give into it.